This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to the SI Boxing Podcast. Lot to get into this week. A lot of big news. Big fight this weekend in the heavyweight division and some other big fights to look forward to over the next couple of weeks. Joining me to discuss all that, a frequent guest of the podcast, the great Kevin Ioli, senior boxing writer over at Yahoo Sports. Kevin, what's going on, man?
Well, I can tell you got the check when you were using that word great. I put a little extra juice in there. Thank you, Chris.
I try to be as accurate as possible. I strive to be, my friend. All right, let me jump right into it. Before I get to what we have in the rundown, I got to throw out the rundown for a second. Just yesterday, Floyd Mayweather, a guy you know very well, who had said just days earlier in an interview with Reuters that he had no intention of coming back, posts on Instagram that he is coming back, coming out of retirement in 2020. That was his post on Instagram. The picture was of him in a boxing outfit, boxing gloves on, boxing trunks on, sort of implying that he intends to fight again in 2020. What do you know about Floyd Mayweather's plans as far as his boxing career goes?
Well, I don't know a ton. I was just over at the UFC, and he wasn't there, so if that's of any use. But the UFC official account, as well as Dana White, as well as a number of their matchmakers, have retweeted not just the one post, but there was two posts. They also Floyd also posted a photo of Dana White and he at a Celtics game, and they were sitting side by side. So and he said, "I'm going to work with Dana White on something big in 2020." They do work together in one way in the fact that there is a Mayweather manages a fighter who fights in the UFC. So they do have that together, although he's not a significant fighter at this point in the UFC. My guess on what's going on, Chris, is exactly what happens at a lot of big fights for Floyd Mayweather. He wants to be the center of attention. We remember this on Golovkin Alvarez, too. He was in Japan. He tweeted he was about to fight Manny Pacquiao. Everybody wrote about it, took all the attention away, or a lot of the attention away from the fight. And then, of course, we know that they did not fight again. The only reason I give it a little bit more credence than I ordinarily would is because the UFC and Dana White retweeted this. And what reason would they have to be involved in BSing the public and putting forth nonsense unless they knew there were some plans? So that is the only small thing that gives me pause and makes me say maybe there's something going on between them. I don't think he's going to box again. I certainly don't think he's going to fight in the cage. But maybe something is up where they joined forces for some kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, Dana has made it clear that he'd like to be involved in boxing. He initially said he'd have some kind of big announcement in October. That month came and went. We're now closing in end November. We still don't know what, if any, involvement outside of the occasional low-level fight on UFC Fight Pass that Dana is going to be involved in. So maybe a Mayweather Promotions team up is in the offing. I could certainly see that given their relationship. I don't know exactly what fighters Mayweather could offer. I mean, I guess he could bring Gervonta Davis over, maybe, but I don't know. That seems to be a little bit unclear at this point. What I did find interesting, though, Kevin, is that you're right. Floyd does this for attention, but in doing this now, he takes some of the attention off of Deontay Wilder against Luis Ortiz, and that is a fight that is being effectively promoted by Al Haymon. And Al Haymon has a huge financial investment in Deontay Wilder.
Well, the fight is being promoted officially by Mayweather Promotions.
Yes, I mean, it's wild. Like, the money that is being thrown into this fight for the purses of Wilder and Ortiz and of course, Mayweather Promotions, like, it's like cutting your nose off to spite your face. Like, it's counterproductive for Mayweather to take any kind of attention to all this. That I found bewildering, that that Mayweather would choose to do this not for a Pacquiao fight, not for a Canelo fight, but for a fight that his promotional company is involved in and his manager, Al Haymon, who has made him huge sums of money, who is at a huge amount of money on the line in a fight like this in terms of how many pay-per-views it does, he would undercut it in the way he did, that he did.
Well, Chris, I believe you were ringside for Manny Pacquiao and Keith Thurman. And Keith Thurman was out in the runway, and he was ready to make his ring walk, and Floyd came to the ring and took his seat. That was a fight that Floyd was also theoretically the promoter of, because Mayweather Promotions and TGB Promotions were the co-promoters of that fight. And Floyd, you know, made the late dramatic entrance and took the attention away from the fighters and put it on himself. Now, he didn't do any "I'm coming back to fight" thing, but, you know, of course, he got a ton of attention just for that. So he has a history of doing this. I think he's shown that, you know, he loves having the crowd and the spotlight on him no matter what. And I think that he feels like whatever promotional fee he's going to get isn't going to be significant enough to be offset by, you know, him pulling a stunt like this. I think it's disappointing that he wouldn't do everything he could to help Deontay and Luis and the other fighters on the card to try to maximize the revenue and get out there and promote it himself and talk. But, you know, that's the way Floyd is, and I don't think we're ever going to change that, what you and I say.
Yeah, I mean, it's just weird. And look, I don't think Floyd fights again either. The only fight to come back for would be a Pacquiao rematch. But man, in February, Floyd's going to be 43. In December, Pacquiao's going to be 41. I don't have any appetite for it. I know that there will always be mainstream interest in a rematch there, just like there is still mainstream interest in Canelo versus Golovkin, despite the fact that we kind of know that Canelo sort of surpassed him at this point. But I don't know, whatever. We'll see what happens at this point. All right, let me get into it with you about the podcast I did last week. On the pod last week, I had an executive over at Fox, Bill Wanger, who is effectively the top boxing exec with Fox. And he said some interesting things, some things that really triggered some people in the boxing industry. He talked about the PBC belts and how he believes that they're coming. He talks about how, you know, the reason they don't mention Terrence Crawford on the broadcast is because the WBO is not an organization they would like to recognize. I thought some of his comments were interesting, but I want to get your thoughts as an outsider, someone that wasn't in the room there, and someone that obviously covers boxing deeply. What was your takeaways from that interview with the Fox executive?
Yeah, I thought it was really an interesting interview that you did. And, you know, Bill Wanger is a credible guy. I know Bill dealt with him, you know, for many years, not only in boxing, but when UFC was on Fox, and I worked with him on stuff there. And, you know, so he is a credible guy. To take the two issues, let's start with the belt. You know, I have mixed emotions, right? The last thing we need is more title belts and more confusion in the ranks. But I also say this: anything that will make a fighter more money, I'm in favor of. And if somehow having a PBC title belt will make a fighter more money, great, go for it. It's not going to kill anything. But if they think that they're going to pull what the UFC did and have that belt be the belt, they are sadly, sadly, sadly mistaken. You have to understand the genesis of the UFC title, how it became to be what it is now in MMA, where MMA was a dying sport. It was almost completely gone. And UFC was hemorrhaging money. Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta bought it, and they effectively became the sport. There was a couple promotions, and there's now a couple big promotions that are up and running. But if you look even now at the top 100 fighters in the sport of MMA, the vast majority of them, not all of them, but the vast majority fight under the UFC banner. So that title has some credibility. And the UFC treats it with credibility. They don't arbitrarily strip fighters and make crazy mandatories and that kind of thing. Now, if we go to boxing, that's not the case. And so we know, hey, is Terrence Crawford the best welterweight in the world? Or is Errol Spence the best welterweight in the world? Or who is it? And so all of a sudden, you're not identifying the best fighter in the world if you give them a PBC belt. So I don't see what they think they're gaining by it. I think there's very little to gain. But we know in TV fights that TV networks love to advertise it as a championship fight. And if Fox gets behind this and they pay their champions more because they have a PBC belt, more power to them. I won't take it all that seriously. But I think, you know, if it benefits the fighters, I'm in favor of it. As far, Chris, as the other issue goes, not recognizing WBO, that is absolutely asinine. The WBO is a major organization with some of the best fighters in the world, and if you do not recognize it for business reasons, you are making a mistake. If you are purporting to be putting on the best fights in the world, you cannot ignore fighters who have WBO titles through no fault of their own. Hey, they went out there and they fought for the title. It's not like the fighters are representing some particular cause. And so I think it's asinine, completely moronic to not recognize the WBO when it is clearly on a par with the other three. Organizations all have their faults. They all have their strengths. But the WBO has a lot of good champions, and it is ridiculous to not recognize their belts.
Yeah, I mean, if you start looking, I'm not going to sit here and defend the WBO as this organization beyond reproach. I mean, they once ranked a dead guy. Like, I mean, come on. Like, it's they're as flawed as any other. I would say this about them. Like, you know, the WBA has proliferated, if that's the right word, their belts over the last 5 or 6 years. There's three in most divisions. The WBC just makes up belts. Franchise championship, Mayan championship, Pearl belt. I mean, there's just more belts that they just, there's no rhyme or reason for them making up belts. And the IBF only operates in a reasonable way. It's because in the 1990s, the FBI raided them. And now they kind of have to operate in that way. And they still have what I think are some ridiculous rankings. So to exclude the WBO, it doesn't make any sense. It's clearly something that, look, the PBC and the fighters in the PBC, it's a fact that they're not ranked as high in the WBO rankings as they are in some other rankings. They don't have fighters that have WBC or WBO belts outside of, I guess, Andy Ruiz, who has the WBO title for now until he fights, until we see what happens with the Anthony Joshua rematch. But it just, I'm with you. It just, the WBO is, it is what it is. It's fine. It's not perfect, but if you're going to recognize a secondary WBA title, you can't stand there and say the WBO is the organization that has the least credibility.
Well, yeah, just, I mean, look, I think the fighters give the credibility to the organization. And if you look down the list, I just pulled up the list of WBO champions. Andy Ruiz, certainly he's a very credible champion. Cruiserweight Maris Bredas, Canelo Alvarez at light heavyweight, Billy Joe Saunders at super middleweight, Demetrius Andrade at middleweight, Munguia at 154, Terrence Crawford at 147, Jose Ramirez at 140, Vasyl Lomachenko at 135. I mean, where is this a bad group of champions? I mean, it is not. And it's, you know, is it the best? I'll leave that for somebody else to argue. They have Navarrete. I mean, they have a ton of good fighters out there. And for a promotion, manager, company, whatever you want to call the PBC and Fox, to just say we are not going to work with them, I think is wrong. Whatever issues exist between Al Haymon and the WBO need to be addressed. And I think you work cooperatively and collaboratively together to try to address them, not to say we're going to ignore this one big chunk of the sport.
Do you have any idea what the issues are between Al Haymon and the WBO?
I don't. You know, I have never talked to Al, of course, or haven't in a long, long time. And so I haven't had the chance to find out. So I don't know what the answer is on that, what the reason is. And so it's, you know, it's a mystery, as so many things are with the PBC.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And as far as the PBC belts go, I agree 100% with you. The only way something like that works is if you have control of like 90%+ of the top fighters. And I know that Bill Wanger said on the podcast that they believe the PBC has 99% of the top fighters. That's just objectively not true. I mean, there are too many top fighters fighting for Top Rank, fighting for Eddie Hearn, fighting on different platforms for that to be true. So you can declare someone the best welterweight in the world, but nobody that follows boxing is going to believe that until they face Terrence Crawford. Similarly, you know, Deontay Wilder could say, you could have the PBC champion at heavyweight, but everyone will look at Joshua and maybe Usyk as he rises in the rankings as a peer, and Andy Ruiz, of course, as a peer in that division. So I think, look, Kevin, I think they're going to go forward with it. I think in 2020, You were, yeah, you're going to see it.
But here's what I want to say. Here's what I would say. I hope Bill Wenger is listening to this. So I know my pound for pound rankings are my opinion, and they're my opinion only. But I've covered boxing for more than 30 years, which I think gives me some credibility on the subject. And I talk to people in the boxing business as you do every single day. And I'm just going to read my top 10, and I'm going to say what network they are with. Canelo Alvarez, DAZN; Terrence Crawford, ESPN; Vasyl Lomachenko, ESPN; Errol Spence, PBC; Noya Inoue, ESPN; Usyk, DAZN; Manny Pacquiao, PBC; Artur Beterbiev, Top Rank, ESPN; Jose Ramirez, ESPN; Gennady Golovkin, DAZN. So I think I only said out of 10 fighters, I said two names that were in the PBC. That doesn't mean I agree that the PBC has a lot of very good fighters. I agree with that. But to say we have the absolute best fighters, when you take, go around and look at all the different pound for pound lists that exist, and I think they're going to mirror mine very closely. I think I have Ramirez in my top 10. A lot of people don't. But I think my other nine fighters are in everybody's top 10 in some different order. So where is the where is this flood of PBC fighters that are out there that are making the other organizations obsolete? It's just ridiculous. It's posturing, and I would expect better from Fox than to do that.
Yeah, and look, I give Bill Wenger a lot of credit for coming on with me, knowing, you know, probably what the subject matter was going to be. I do think one of my takeaways from that interview with Kevin was that Fox is going to do what they're going to create their own universe, and if you're not in it, they're just not going to pay a lot of attention to you, if any at all, and they're fine with it. That just seems to be the mentality. Whether that comes from Al Haymon on down or is something that Fox really believes, I don't know. But I think that's going to be their mindset, which I do think is going to prevent some really good fights from happening in 2020. Now, we're probably too far down the road to stop some kind of collaboration between Wilder and Fury and Fox and ESPN. I think that's inevitable. But I did find it interesting that, you know, Bill Wenger said that there is no television deal yet for that. And I wonder what impact that's going to have on the timing of a potential fight between Wilder and Fury.
Yeah, I mean, if it does not end up as a co-promotion on Fox and ESPN, I would be the most shocked man in the universe. And, you know, if you have to think of it from this standpoint. You know, February 22nd date is, to me, the second best date they could have put it on behind February 15th. And the reason I say that is the Super Bowl is on Fox on February 9th. You know, obviously ESPN goes crazy to cover the Super Bowl. Fox is going to have it. You're going to have all those commercials during the game pumping the fight. You're going to have all the fight week build up on ESPN. They're going to be pumping the fight. Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury are going to be there all week. They're going to be doing Radio Row. They're going to be talking to football writers, and I'm sure there'll be some boxing writers that make the trek down there. The promotional gold that date is cannot be underestimated. And I think, you know, a rematch between Fury and Wilder, if we said it doubled from the last time and it did 300-something, and went to 600 or 700,000. I think under normal circumstances, that would be a triple grand slam home run. But Chris, I think they're going to do well over a million if Wilder comes through this fight the way I think he will. And I predicted on Yahoo Sports today that he would knock him out between 5 and 7 rounds. If he comes through that fight on Saturday with a knockout, impressive knockout victory, I think the Wilder Fury rematch is going to easily be over a million. And that is banking on the fact that it's on Fox pay-per-view and Fox is pumping it during the Super Bowl. I think that's a magic date, and it's so genius. If Fox turns that down, then everything else they say makes no sense.
Yeah, it's a great point on the timing, because if it gets deeper into the calendar, Fox loses a lot of its ability to promote. You have baseball, I guess, coming up in the spring, but that's not the same thing as putting it on football broadcast, and certainly not the Super Bowl, which is the biggest event of them all, the biggest promotional vehicle you could possibly have. So it certainly needs to be on one of those two dates. February 22nd, obviously the target date, but with ESPN promoting as well, that's a pretty big deal for Fox. One last takeaway from the interview with Bill Wenger, Kevin, was the relationship that Fox has with Showtime, that Al Haymon and the PBC has with both networks, In one moment, Bill suggested that they were partners with Showtime because they promote the Showtime fights as part of the PBC universe. On the other hand, it was also made clear that Fox gets the best fights. The phrase Bill Wanger used was premier position for PBC fights, which I thought was interesting. I mean, it was the first time something like that had been said publicly, even though we kind of knew that was the case with Fox getting these top tier fights and Showtime left with most of the lesser tier ones. What did you make of a Fox executive saying something like that about the relationship with Showtime?
Yeah, it was surprising that he said it, but I think it was true. I mean, I think everybody who's been around the sport has known that. Just look at what Showtime has done. Now, I think Showtime has been in for a rude awakening since the PBC started this deal with Fox. I know at the beginning, even from when they unveiled the first couple of fights that were going to be on the PBC on Fox, you know, people at Showtime, you talk to them and they were saying privately, hey, we're going to get all the best fights. We're not going to take these crumb bum fights. We're going to get the best fights. And Al Heyman has shown, you know, that he prefers to put those fighters on Fox. And I think it's obvious, and it's been obvious for a long time. So I guess the only surprise I had that, you know, it was something that we all knew, but just that an executive in the industry would actually go ahead and speak those words publicly. That was the only surprise whatsoever.
Yeah, and I don't blame Al Heyman for wanting to put these fights on Fox, because we've seen just how much marketing inventory Fox will use, advertising inventory. I mean, they will put, you know, whether it's Sean Porter on a Fox NFL broadcast or an NFL pregame show, or, you know, pumping the crap out of the Wilder Ortiz fight and its NFL broadcast. I mean, they will use their most popular vehicles to promote these big pay-per-views. And Showtime alone, they just don't have it. What's perplexing to me, and I mean, maybe there's a real reason for it, but CBS is not really involved with this anymore. And you would think, Kevin, that if CBS put the kind of muscle behind Showtime fights and Showtime pay-per-views that Fox did, it would create an even broader appeal, because CBS is, by the numbers, is a bigger network than Fox is. But that's just not been the case. CBS just hasn't seemed as interested in supporting Showtime boxing as Fox has in supporting its broadcasts.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because, hey, look at it. PBC has people on staff. They bought the website Boxing Scene. They have full-timers on that staff. They have Brian Campbell, who came over from ESPN, who's working on their staff writing for CBS Sports. They do a lot of stuff with combat sports on CBS properties, on digital properties online, and yet CBS itself, the network, is not interested in the fights. And I guess, you know, maybe they're looking at, they feel like they have, you know, they have the SEC in college football, they have the college basketball package. So I'm guessing that they look and say, we don't really have room on a regular basis to be putting boxing on, given that kind of lineup that they have. You know, nobody in his right mind would say, you know, you should get rid of a SEC football game for a boxing match. So I think as a result, that, you know, that's why CBS's reticence is in there. But, you know, yeah, I agree. That's been to Fox's benefit, because certainly Fox is, they did it with the UFC. And I wrote it when the PBC joined forces. I said, you're going to see, they're going to really go big time. And they used to do it with UFC events, and now they're doing it with Fox events. I think that's why, you know, the Pacquiao Thurman pay-per-view was a little higher than people thought. It's why Spence Porter was a little higher than people thought, because I think that Fox impact is being felt at the pay-per-view window.
What do you think this means for Showtime in the future? I mean, Steven Espinosa says Showtime will still be around. They'll still do boxing. They certainly do quality lower level shows. I believe they are still the gold standard in boxing broadcasting. I think they've, you know, this is, as someone that's part of a boxing broadcasting team, I think they do a terrific job with everything that they do. But if you don't have the fighters, you don't have the fighters. And I'm not sure how you survive as a big-time boxing network if Gervonta Davis and Adrian Broner are your two tentpole guys, unless they can come to some other better sharing agreement. It doesn't sound like Fox wants to share. I'm not sure how they survive beyond, like, the first half of 2020.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they, I think they're going to find a way to survive because Steven Espinosa is committed to it. And there's some other people, Matt Blank, who were in that chain of command at Showtime, who are committed to it. And I think that they're going to find a way to survive. And it's cyclical. Al Heyman has shown, you know, he's going to move his loyalties around and he's not going to stick in one spot. You know, when he senses the tide turning, then he'll move with it. You know, the one thing, and I don't say this critically about Al Heyman, I think, you know, his loyalty is to himself, his business and the fighters he's under contract with, not, you know, any given TV network. That's why Deontay Wilder is not signed to any agreement. You know, he can move as he wishes. That's one good thing about that. He can make the big fight by moving around if he wants. Heyman values that flexibility. So I think Showtime will be back at some point, Chris. But I think they're going to go through some dark times. I think one of the things they need to start doing is looking at fighters that are fighting primarily in Europe and try to bring some of those guys over here and go to what I say are these fights. You know what? Maybe they're, you know, they're not the known commodities, but fights that boxing people know, the matchmakers and the people behind the scenes will say, this is going to be a kick-ass fight, and put those fights on. I know DAZN with Eddie Hearn is bidding for those too, and DAZN is kind of like not an 800-pound gorilla, but an 8,000-pound gorilla with the checkbook that they're wielding. But there always has to be some other fighters out there that you can get, and I think that that's what they're going to have to do, because I think relying solely on or primarily on PBC to staff your fights is going to be a problematic for the time being.
Yeah, I agree with you on Al Heyman and the PBC showing, you know, a loyalty to the checkbook. And it isn't a criticism. You should get your guys the best deal possible. So if Showtime comes back in 2020 and says CBS is on board, you're going to have Jim Nance talking about, you know, Deontay Wilder at the Masters, like you'll get them back into that mix. It's just it's going to take that, I think, to get them back into the big time boxing mix. Did you know that as many as 7 out of 10 adults wish they played a musical instrument? I'm one of them. Unfortunately, many never do because they think it's too late for them to start, too expensive, or feel they don't have time. Musician is an online music education platform rethinking the way people learn music. It's the fun, easy, and affordable way to learn guitar, piano, bass, ukulele, even singing. Just download the app to your desktop, tablet, or phone, and start playing. Musician's award-winning technology actually listens to you play and gives real-time feedback on timing and accuracy. No need for chords or any special equipment. With Musician, you learn to play your favorite songs faster than ever and have some fun doing it. Musician is perfect when you're just starting out or have been playing for years. You enjoy thousands of popular songs, expertly crafted lessons and exercises across dozens of genres. You'll even learn music theory, sheet reading, and tablature too. Compared to private lessons, Musician is more affordable and lets you learn on your own schedule. Musician is designed to be fun and addictive, almost like Guitar Hero or Rock Band, but with real instruments. It gives you 24/7 access to step-by-step video tutorials from world-class educators. You get bite-sized lessons, easy-to-follow instructions, and exercises tailored to your goals. So if you've been wanting to learn an instrument or simply want some help getting back to playing, check out Musician. You can get an extended 14-day free trial of their Premium Plus package at musician.com/play. That's unlimited lessons and unlimited songs on as many instruments as you want for 2 whole weeks. Just go to musician.com/play to start your free trial today. That's Musician, YOUSICIAN.com/play. All right, before we get to Fury versus Wilder 2, Wilder's got a fight to win, and that's in Vegas on Saturday. You and I will both be there ringside for that one, and it's an interesting fight. I mean, it was just a year plus ago when Luis Ortiz gave Deontay Wilder the biggest scare of his professional career. He had him hurt in the 7th round, nearly knocked him down. Wilder has admitted he was worried the referee might stop the fight. Wilder showed some real heart, showed courage for being facing with adversity for the first time in his career, and overcame it. Came back and stopped Luis Ortiz in the 10th round. Now, Ortiz has won 3 low-level fights since then. He is 40 years old. There are certainly some people in boxing that believe he's even older than that as a Cuban refugee, but he's going to get another chance at Deontay Wilder. What do you think of this matchup? How much of a threat is Luis Ortiz in the second time around?
Yeah, I think he's a threat because he can punch, right? I mean, I am not looking at him to win this fight. I picked Wilder to win between 5 and 7 rounds. I think, you know, we look at the first fight, and I think because it didn't go the way everybody expected, you know, we start to think Luis did better than he actually did in the fight. It was close on the scorecards. Wilder's not a guy that's going to win a lot of rounds and outpoint people. Wilder's a guy that's going to knock your head off, and that's what he comes to do, and he's not looking to box. I think when you look at how this fight goes, you know, Ortiz has a path to victory. He is a left-hander and difficult to fight, and he knows how to box, and he can punch. So those things make a lot of, you know, give a lot of fighters a lot of problems. And, hey, Ortiz has only lost to Deontay Wilder. Having said that, Chris, you know, in my preview I said there's three things that I think that make Deontay Wilder special, and I think why it puts him above Luis Ortiz. He is one of the hardest punching heavyweights who's ever lived. I wouldn't say he's the hardest, but I think he is certainly one of the hardest punching heavyweights. He gets great leverage from that 6'7" frame when he throws those punches. He is extremely quick, and he is extremely aggressive. And I think, you know, and I made the analogy in my column today. I said it is like asking a quarterback to hit a receiver who's making a double move when there's 9 guys blitzing him, and he's got to stand in there and wait for the receiver to make the double move, get down the field, make the double move. I said there's not time. So against Wilder, you know, he's so aggressive, and he's coming at you so incessantly and so quickly with such hard punches that you cannot fight the normal fight you want to fight. It's very difficult. Tyson Fury did well, I think, because of his size and reach. And that was a fight where Wilder was, for the first and only time in his career, was not the bigger man. I think when you look at Luis Ortiz, he's got a 70-something inch reach, but he's got a 7-inch reach disadvantage from Wilder. I think that gives Wilder a lot of advantage. Also, the fact that Wilder doesn't have the flu now, which he had going into the last fight. I just feel like Luis does, you know, hey, if he throws and Wilder is in his head is where that punch goes, Ortiz has the ability to knock him out. But I do think Wilder has a very good chin. And I think the odds are heavily in Wilder's favor. The fact that it's about 6.5 to 1, I think, is a fair number. And I think if I were, betting on the fight, I would just stay away, because you don't make much money betting on 6 to 1, 7 to 1 favorites. And I don't really like Ortiz's chances too much.
Yeah, I mean, look, I thought Ortiz, you know, did what he could in that first fight. And he certainly, maybe he was a little bit younger and he had a little more left in the tank, he might have been able to stop Wilder in that one. But a fight like that, a knockout like that, we've seen in the past, Kevin, it can take something out of you. You know, it can diminish you in a way. And Ortiz coming back with the 3 fights he's won, I mean, very low-level competition. The last 2, Travis Kaufman, all right, whatever, looked okay against Christian Hammer, but he took that to a decision. That was back in March. I have very low expectations for Luis Ortiz in this one. If I was betting on this fight, I would say Wilder finishes it inside 4 rounds. I just think Wilder, I'm not sure that he's improving exponentially. Like, I don't think he's improving in the same way Canelo Alvarez is improving, but he still is a guy that is learning on the job in a way, because he got into boxing at such an advanced age. I still think there's room for improvement. He's been showing that. I mean, his knockout of Dominic Brazil in the last fight was impressive. First round knockout. I can see him doing something just as impressive against Ortiz. Now, he's going to have to be more careful against Ortiz than he was against Brazil, but I think Wilder is getting better, and I think there's a real possibility that Ortiz is measurably worse in this fight.
Yeah, I think the narrative has been, you know, that Deontay's taking a risk by fighting a guy that has punching power, and there is a risk. But I think when you put it relative, look at the 2 guys that Fury fought, right? We could say Fury took a risk by fighting those 2 guys as opposed to going to a direct rematch. He fought Tom Schwartz, who I would give you a shot to beat, and he fought Otto Wallin, who I would give Sergio Mora a shot to beat, right? So, you know, we look at those 2 guys and say, okay, they weren't really much. So Luis Ortiz, I think, is a more significant, more substantial opponent than either of those 2. And that's where where people are saying it's a risk for Wilder. But yeah, I agree with your larger point that I don't think that he presents a real big problem. The fact that I'm saying I think it's going to be probably a a fifth or, you know, sixth round stoppage would suggest that I don't think it's all that competitive of a fight either. So I just think, you know, that it's going to be an entertaining fight because people love to see big guys get in there and slug. And that's what we're going to see for however long Ortiz can take and however long it takes Wilder to get one onto the chin.
Please don't say Sergio Mora can beat anybody. That's not happening. He's not winning any more fights.
Hey, listen, Sergio Mora can beat me, and I'll say that. So at least we know he can beat me. You, I don't know about. I know you're in a lot better shape than me. So you might give Sergio a run for the money. I might even be willing to referee that if you want to get in there with him.
Sergio wants to fight Peter Manfredo so bad he can taste it. He wants that third fight with Manfredo badly. Manfredo's fighting this weekend, too. He's got a comeback fight, I think, at light heavyweight. If Manfredo wins, I think the drumbeat gets louder, at least among, you know, me and you, to have Sergio fight Manfredo a third time.
Hey, you know what? Why Sergio is one of the, you know, and I mean this, you know, I know you guys are friends and kid around all the time, and Sergio is a friend of mine, too. I think Sergio has such a bright future as a broadcaster. He doesn't need to fool around with that, right? You know, I get in there and do your thing. I mean, he is going to be, you know, the face of boxing in a couple of years is one of the top broadcasters out there. You know, I think he has a chance to be what Larry Merchant was. You know, I mean, I think you and he, and I don't say this because we're friends, I think make a great team on the air. I really like the work that you do, and I've written that, you know, before. But I think Sergio is a special talent as a fighter. You don't need to lower yourself to fighting a guy like Peter Manfredo, who, no disrespect to Peter. Peter is just shot and done, and he's fighting because he needs a check. Sergio is beyond fighting fights like that. Sergio is an elite guy, an elite broadcaster. Focus on that career.
I agree with you, and Sergio is excellent, I think, as a broadcaster. I've said that many times. However, if he does fight Peter Manfredo and he fights him on DAZN, I'm broadcasting the fight wearing a Manfredo t-shirt. I am wearing a Manfredo t-shirt, a Manfredo hat. I may work Manfredo's corner. Who knows? I'll just
I may
be supportive of Manfredo.
So Gomez shirt on, just, you know, to kind of give him some creeps. And Ishae Smith can sit at ringside and call the fight as opposed to Sergio.
I agree. We'll call it, you know, broadcasting rights on the line. If Manfredo wins, he sits in the box for the next couple of fights. We'll see how that goes. All right, let's talk about the undercard of the fight this weekend. We've got Leo Santa Cruz back in action. He's taking on Miguel Flores. That's for the super featherweight title. It's the second straight kind of low-level fight for Leo Santa Cruz. Flores is okay, but he's not considered a top-tier fighter. Before that, he beat Rafael Rivera earlier this year. This has kind of been I don't want to say it's a lost year for Santa Cruz because he's taken a couple fights and he's won. He's certainly made some money, but there are guys, Kevin, in and around that division that are obvious and easy fights to make, you would think, for Leo Santa Cruz, and they haven't been made for whatever reason, whether it's Gary Russell or some of these other guys. I mean, what do you make of the last year for Santa Cruz, which, you know, it's been about a year and a half now since he beat Abner Mares in the rematch.
Right. I know they... you know, he wants to get a big fight. And I also know, you know, talking about going up to that, to 130 is appealing to him just because it's, you know, when you get to be his age, plus 30, trying to make those lighter weights is always difficult. So having the extra couple of pounds, you know, makes a big difference. I agree that there are a lot of good fights out there for him. There are a lot of good fights for him at 130. So I think, you know, we're in a situation where, you know, Top Rank has a lot of control, Top Rank and Golden Boy in this division. So if he goes in there and fights at 130, you know, we're going to be on the issue with the other promoters and the other TV networks again. But, you know, having said that, the PBC and Top Rank have worked together for quite a few fights. And I would think that, you know, that might be something that could be done to get Leo in if Leo beats Flores and wins that title. I wouldn't mind seeing him go back and fight a Gary Russell. You know, when you look at what's going on at featherweight, you know, Josh Warrington's going to fight Shakur Stevenson. You know, I mean, how much longer till Gary Russell makes his, you know, annual 18-month appearance, you know, so we don't know when he's going to be back in the ring. So I think there's, you know, some issues there. I'd love to see him at 130. There's a lot of good fighters at 130. Put him there, and to me, that would be a good place for him.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. There's a lot of fights that are tough to make because of where they are politically, but there are some very good ones that Santa Cruz can make, and I'd like to see him. He's an incredibly entertaining fighter, and I do think, Kevin, he's a fighter with a shelf life. I think when you fight a certain style and you fight with a certain level of activity, as the ability to be that active goes down, you lose something. I think he could have a bit of a cliff as he gets into his early 30s that causes him to drop off. So I'd like to see him more active against top guys now as opposed to a couple of years from now. By the way, speaking of sanctioning bodies behaving badly, like, how is this a world title fight? Like, Andrew Cancio, who's fighting also on the same night, he is defending his version of the super featherweight title. Santa Cruz is just fighting for a vacant version of it. This is the one that Gervonta Davis left behind, right? I mean, this is why it's hard to figure this stuff out, and why, you know, the WBA gets any consideration as a legitimate sanctioning body. They just go out and sanction Santa Cruz versus Flores when Cancio is fighting on the same night for a title in the same weight class.
Yeah, I mean, when Gilbert Mendoza Sr. died, his son, you know, indicated he was going to try to make changes and stop doing this thing. And they've gotten worse. And I think this anecdote that I'll tell you, Chris, I think encapsulates sort of the fighter's view of this. Luis Ortiz, as you know, somebody asked him the other day, said, "Hey, what would it be like to become the first Cuban to be the heavyweight champion?" And he answered the question, "Oh, you know, it would be good for me, but nobody in Cuba will care about it." I said to him, "Hey, weren't you already the champion? Because you held a WBA belt." And he just laughed at it, right? You know, and he said, "I don't think too many people really thought about that." You know, so he recognized he was the WBA interim heavyweight champion. He defended it a couple of times. And still, even he didn't think it was that significant. I mean, it's just they're making a mockery of the sport. And the one thing that I try to do is not too much to get involved with the sanctioning bodies, because I think we could go down that rabbit hole and talk, you know, we go back to when the WBA moved up, or WBO, excuse me, moved up a dead fighter in the rankings. And we could discuss that and all sorts of other atrocities. But that takes the focus in the wrong spot. The sanctioning bodies, unfortunately, are never going to change. They're going to do what they do because it's a for-profit business. And they're making a ton of money on this, and they're getting free meals and flown around the world and all these other things. And their hotels paid for, and their conventions in these exotic spots, and these guys are getting a lot of benefit out of it. And it doesn't really help the sport. It doesn't help boost the sport forward. So I think the less time we spend on that and in credibility we give them, the better.
Yeah, and one thing I would say is that I would like to see more fighters just, you know, ignore it and say, "I'm going to take this fight, but I don't need your title to be on the line." Not to say that Leo Santa Cruz is above titles, but this is a really popular guy, fights an exciting style, well-known amongst, you know, the deep boxing community. He doesn't need to fight for this title, not when everybody kind of already knows that with Davis gone, Cancio is the real title holder at 130 pounds. He doesn't need that. And by the way, doesn't need to pay the sanctioning fee either. Like, I don't know how much he's paying for the right to fight for this title, but he doesn't need to pay that. And it's just a waste of money, his money, that he's throwing away for a belt that I think is largely meaningless for a guy like him.
So it's costed him, you know, it's probably cost him around $20,000+ because he's paying 3% to the WBA for the sanction fee of this fight. He's making $750,000. So what would that be? 15, 22, 5. So he's paying $22,500 to get that belt and to call himself, you know, a world champion again. I mean, does anybody think he's the best 130 in the world by winning that? No. I mean, you know, The only, again, and I'll go back to what I said when I talked about the PBC belts. If he's getting paid more, and only his, you know, his people would know this, but if he's making more because it's a title fight, okay, God bless him, and then he's making more. But you have to, I agree with you, ignore these things and try to just make the best fights and make a reputation for yourself that, hey, I'm a tough guy. I've beaten a lot of tough guys, and championship or not, I will fight anybody at any time.
Yeah, and if I'm Andrew Cancio, who, as I mentioned, fights in Fantasy Springs on Saturday, faces Rene Alvarado, his mandatory, in a rematch, I'd have some beef with the WBA. I mean, Cancio, in back-to-back fights, beat a guy that you know, was at the time widely viewed as one of, if not the top guy at 130 pounds in Alberto Machado, and did it with knockouts, like did it convincingly. And now he's got to look around and say, well, Davis, who had kind of a odd claim at the title anyway, he's gone. And now you're going to make Santa Cruz the super champion? And me, I'm still your regular title holder? If I'm Cancio, I'd have some issue with that.
And I think Cancio would have the right to, you know, to complain. But you know what? They're not going to make any changes. So, again, that's why I look at it and say, hey, you know what? It is what it is. I mention them in my stories because it is a factual, just like the fight on Saturdays at the MGM Grand. It's also for the WBC heavyweight title. That's as far as I'm not going to go into the WBC rankings or any of that because it's bullshit. Nobody gives a shit about them. You know, what they care about is the two fighters and how they match up. And so, you know, Cancio, of course, would have a beef with whoever wins this particular fight. And, you know, the problem we would have is the WBA wouldn't even try to clean it up and say, okay, let's make the Cancio Alvarado winner fight the Flores Santa Cruz winner. They won't even do that. So they like having all these championships, and this is the result of it.
Yeah, what it comes down to is all these sanctioning bodies want to find their way into like the introductions for a big fight or a fight involving a big fighter. So for the WBA, you know, 100 super featherweight championship, whatever it is, it's not just the WBA, it's the WBC with their franchise title, and you know, the WBO is guilty of it, I think, at times as well. It's just tough. I'm going to take an aspirin after this, Kevin, just talking about it. Like, it gives you a headache,
you know, Chris,
just diving into all this.
Chuck Minker used to be the executive director of the Nevada Athletic Commission until he died in, I believe it was 1992. So it's a long time since Chuck has been around. But he told me something. You know, I was talking to him. This was back at a time when there was only the WBA and the WBC. The IBF didn't exist, and nor did the WBO at that point. And I was asking him about, you know, these multiple champions and why can't they get together and have, you know, have one champion. And he said what the reason that they sanctioned, in his opinion, was the reason that they sanctioned a lot of these championship fights the way they did was because they're playing, you know, they're rolling the dice. They want to get a Floyd Mayweather. They want to get a Vasyl Lomachenko, and you get lucky. And if you keep having enough title fights, the odds that you get one of these big guys that then gets a big purse and command and then ends up paying big fees, because, you know, it helps them. If they have Floyd Mayweather, not only does it help the WBC that they have Floyd Mayweather as one of their champions, now all of a sudden other fighters want to fight for the WBC belt because it's the belt that Floyd had. And then that, you know, Canelo gets it, and then it has that added effect, in addition to the big sanctioning fees that they get. So that's why, you know, I think that was as good a theory as any as to why this happened. You know, they're just playing the numbers game, and they're hoping to roll the dice and find a superstar somewhere that they now have in their ranks as champion. And then hey, look at it. Look at what the WBC does. They, you know, they roll themselves, you know, it's kind of like you hear people wrapping themselves in the flag. They wrap themselves in all these former champions that they had all the time.
Yeah, it's a good point. And your other point was even better, that, you know, you and I can sit here and shame them all we want. They're just shameless. They will not be shamed to change anything. So no matter how much griping people do, it's just never, ever going to change, which is really the only upside to creating PBC belts or whatever organization decides to do it. Maybe cleaning that up could potentially happen down the line. Kevin, always appreciate your time, man. We will see you Saturday in Las Vegas. Wilder Ortiz, looking forward to it, my friend.
Great stuff as always, Chris. Thank you so much.